Edge Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Your chance to have your say, because we're an open line today. Through to 1 o'clock, call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Well, you heard the story in the midday news. The post office, the Kirk-on-Cum post office, its current provider is going in August, so time's certainly changing regarding sub-post offices around the Isle of Man. That news about the bus station, what's going to happen, where the bus station will be, and also what on earth is going to happen regarding the Nobles Park. What should we do? The local authority is looking to future-proof Nobles Park, and they want you to tell them what to do with it. It's hoped a draft master plan will guide decision-making for Nobles Park. What do we do? I want a message in from Simon, this was, and just said, the Ben McCree is off for refurbishment. Yes, I believe she's in Camel Laird in Birkenhead. Being done up, as it were. I've heard the skeet. Is this true that she'll have no cabins when she comes back? There'll be no passenger cabins because they'll be using all the cabins for the crew to live on board. Is this true? Don't know, but we'll certainly try and find out. Obviously, if the Ben McCree didn't have any passenger cabins, that would affect the, well, what do they call it nowadays? The passenger offering, wouldn't it? But we'll try and find out, Simon, for you, and thanks for that message, the question. Let's get to the lines now. David's first with us today. Hello, David.
Hi, Andy. I just want to thank Mr. Patel and the family for running the post office in Onken. And it's a cheap shot, as far as I'm concerned, from the post office to say, you know, they're going to look for another person to take on. I'm led to believe, and that's only led to believe there, that he was offered 50p a parcel. How can you run a business and pay wages and national insurance and stamps and, you know, the cost of running a building there, heat and light and whatever, you know. It's really terrible what the post office have done. And our government, the MyCard was bad enough. They killed that. You killed that down. And then they also done the same thing with the road tax fund licenses. And everybody's backed up now at the vehicle testing centre. And what I hear from people is that attitude of the staff, maybe they're under pressure or under training, is that do it online. And that's the answer you get all the time from now. The civil servants have been trained. Why do you want to do it in paper form? Do it online. Well, not everybody can do it online, Andy, can they?
Well, not only that. Surely it's not their job to quiz how people live their lives. If people want to turn up with a piece of paper, it's perfectly acceptable. I mean, I can understand their point of view in that they've maybe had all this dumped on them and they're having to deal with lots of people coming in. But, of course, as usual, the consumer, the general public, is in the middle of this.
But the way I look at it, Andy, is from a political point of view and a balancing point of view is, how many staff are they now increased now to do these operations? Instead of running a post office, which is normally a family business or individuals there, all combined with some of the supermarkets, the smaller ones anyway there. I just wonder what's happening with the one in Kirkmichael and the one at Bride. Do you remember the guy that came on at Bride said he now has to travel to either Ramsey or Douglas to get his pension? You know, in this day and age, okay, banks are going to be closing now, aren't they, all the time? And it's difficult to get a bank or, you know, get money out of a get money out of a bank, but you know what I mean. Difficult to get your own money in a bank. Everybody wants to tap on their phones, but there's a whole generation there. I would say there's about 60% of the generation don't do IT and maybe never will do IT until the next generation comes along. But we're missing a trick. And our politicians never help us out.
It would be nicer if the politicians or the people in charge of this came up front at the start of all this. If they said 2 years ago, look, there's going to be a big change. There's going to be a big change. We're getting rid of post offices and you're going to have to get used to it. But that's the way it's going to be. Instead of this dribs drabs thing and just saying we're looking for a service provider. Come on.
Yeah. And the other one is too, don't forget the parcel service. We're going to lose those. Every people coming round, that's private individuals who are running their own little businesses with hours that suit them and maybe suit customers as well, is what's happening that. I would love somebody to go to Timbald Hill next Monday and put a petition there and saying this government is operating an anti-competitive practice where it's using its own resources, which has loads of, and it's our money at the end of the day, to circumvent private businesses.
But also, what's happening to the post? What's happening to the Isle of Man post, i.e. the stuff that people send? Does that go to the back of the queue before, you know, at the back of all the parcels that have to be delivered because there's a service agreement with the people, whether it's Amazon or whoever, that the post office has to deliver them within a certain time? What happens to all the other posts? Does that go behind that?
Yeah, well, that's the issue. But and I still want, if you can, my little plea to you is, Andy, mate, because everybody says I'm your mate, is that we get the guy on from Manx Utilities and talk about their wind turbines down south. Because at the end of the day, we've got to do something, haven't we? And next Timbald, there's going to be the document that's coming out for DEFA, regarding helping people who can afford electricity and can afford heating and whatever. Like, what's going to be the future? Is it in this document? I haven't got a copy of it yet. I've asked for a copy. Or let's see if we can get the electronic copy. And maybe you could get the Manx Utility chairman up, Mr. Wanningberg, and say to him, what is he going to do for us if he wants to get back in?
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate that. Thanks for calling today, David. And you can text, email, call and WhatsApp if you want to have your point of view. Just going back to the fact that times are changing, it would be nice if the government departments, senior civil servants for that matter, decision makers, you know, the people who get paid commensurately to do these things for us, if they actually said at the start, this is going to happen. Rather than, and the example I'll use is Douglas Promenade. Nobody said right at the start of Douglas Promenade, actually, we don't quite know what's there. It's going to take a long time. It may go over budget. And by the way, it's a traffic calming measure. And we're going to put in two psychedelic roundabouts that aren't really roundabouts. Nobody said that. They just arrived. And suddenly all the parking disappears. How many parking spaces went from Douglas Promenade? Now it's a lottery, and obviously that's either shoving you into paid-for car parks, or the rumour is there may be another multi-storey car park built in Lower Douglas. So you just wonder why they don't do that at the beginning. Is it that they don't trust the public? Don't they like giving bad news? Again, this post office in Onchan is a centre for many places. And the fact that whenever government talks in its pink and fluffy mode about mental health and us getting together as a community and being cohesive, post offices were that. They were there before anybody thought of that term. Post offices were a place that people got together and did business. And you had a sub-postmaster or mistress putting together a business, working long hours and serving people. Now it's going. Now it's going because there may be another, quote, service provider. What do you think about this? If you're in Onchan, what do you think about the post office going and Mr. Patel losing that business? Julian's on now. Hello, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Welcome back.
Thank you, New.
Yes. Not much solar or wind today, I would guess. It's pretty dull. And
well, I think there'll be some solar.
Oh, well, maybe a bit. Speaking of which, Manx Utilities has submitted its financial case for the Cairby onshore wind energy facility at Eerie Stain in the south of the island. They've submitted this to Treasury. The document is titled Onshore Wind Consolidation of Project Costs. It's just popped up and is now viewable on the FOI website. You can see this FOI. The number is 549-2041. That's 549-2041. The financial assumptions for Cairby Wind Facility are interesting, to say the least. For example, the cost of generating electricity of Pulrose is being assumed to be at the Ukraine war emergency crisis gas pricing. So they've inflated the price going forwards for the entire 25-year lifespan of Cairby to the crazy amounts that we were originally locked into during the Ukraine war. So that's kind of a strange assumption to make. Natural gas prices have fallen hugely since then and are predicted to fall even further. So next assumption is that the wind turbines will produce 2.5 times more electricity even than the Scottish wind turbines do. And this is across Cairby's lifetime. And it doesn't seem to want to talk about the loss of efficiency due to wear and tear. So only on the Isle of Man do wind turbines not degrade from wear and tear, especially when you consider that if they're saying it's going to run 2.5 times more often than anywhere else on the planet, they're going to wear faster, aren't they?
You would have thought so, yeah.
The report's assumptions also ignore the tens of millions of pounds that's extra that we're going to have to fork out for in capital costs that would be required for inertia measures, batteries, grid upgrades, and, of course, modifications to Pulrose gas plant. These expenses are missing from the report. And only on the Isle of Man does wind power not get curtailed, apparently, or switched off when it can't be accommodated on the electrical network. But Pulrose needs to run at a minimum amount of about 25 megawatts. So what you're going to find is we're going to have to stop the wind turbines, which will be about 30% or more of the year that will have to be discarded by turning them off. And if you look at that, that translates into a 42% extra cost to the taxpayer on your kilowatt hour bill, on your electricity bill. Yet the report claims that constraint measures would be zero. And also only on the Isle of Man does the loan disappear when wind turbines appear. And I'm talking about the £185 million bond for Pulrose Power Station. So I don't think this report is particularly realistic, transparent. And I think we actually need to have a proper report looking at all these problems before another penny of our public money is spent on this project, because this report is full of holes like Swiss cheese, as far as I can see.
Is there a timetable on it, Julian?
Well, it's a bit like Morvanin, actually. It seems to be kind of, you know, this was submitted to Treasury. I don't know for sure, but I think possibly this is going to be used for the justification for planning, which is kind of interesting when Ørsted says ignore the financial benefits for Morvanin. So I guess it's one rule for one and no rules for another. But if you, even by their own statements, if this thing's going to be running 2.5 times more than anything in Scotland or Ireland or anywhere else, it's going to wear out quicker. So where they get their 25-year lifespan assumption from, I really don't know. And then you've got all those extra costs of the chunkiness of the electricity that's going to be put out by these things.
Is there any word in there about the connection, about getting it into the grid? Does it say what's going to happen and how much that's going to cost?
There's no detail on that, although, of course, you do have to think, you know, it's going to have to be brought 13 miles from Eerie Stain across to the distribution point at Pulrose. And how much was the very simple, already purchased tram tracks to do the mile from the War Memorial to the Sea Terminal, Andy? Was it 3 million a mile?
Well, it depends which day it is. Is it 2 million a mile or is it 3 million a mile?
So it's somewhere north of 26 million just to put some tracks down. So their assumption is it's a £41 million headline cost for these wind turbines, not forgetting the roads are going to be crunching under 60-ton blades on very, very slow, massive low loaders that are going to have to drag it across to probably Quarter Bridge and then south and then, you know, over the Balakalawi Bridge and up through to the Skard. So it doesn't look very realistic when you start thinking about this. If you start thinking about all the issues with intermittency of wind, and you look at all the costs of everything that's going to have to be thrown into this, and the assumptions that they're using a generation cost that is associated with the worst of the Ukraine crisis for the next 25 years.
And the point I made earlier about people in an authority, you know, coming clean right at the beginning, saying this is what we think it's going to cost, but also there is the connection fee, there's the building the infrastructure to get there, this, that. It would be nice if we knew straight up front and they said, you know, honestly to people, this is what it's going to cost. It's going to be 6 months of complete interruption, getting the blades up there. This is what we're going to get rid of Erie Stain, the plantation's going to be decimated, and this is what is going to happen, rather than saying it behind their hands. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. And also disruption to our network. I mean, are we going to see more blackouts? Because this is going to take some handling. You know, the UK, I mean, they say that there's going to be none of this curtailment or switching off. The UK is spending billions paying the operators curtailment fees, which is in their contract for different contracts.
Yeah.
And they get paid more to switch off than they do to actually produce the electricity. So even with that deal, the likes of Ørsted are still having major problems with their share price.
Well,
so
there is something odd going on. There is one thing about Carevi, of course. Manx Utilities won't be paying curtailment fees because otherwise they'd be paying them to themselves, wouldn't they?
Well, they're kind of deferred because if you've got all, you've got an overall costing that they are saying, but if you're producing less electricity and you're also messing with the efficiency of the gas turbine going up and down trying to match it, a bit like, you know, driving your car for half a mile, never letting it get warm, you're going to use a lot more fuel than you are than if you're running nice and smooth, you know, on the roads, etc. So there's going to be curtailment fees in one way or another, but they're going to result in cost to us because it's not like the UK, because the Manx Utilities are the distributor and they're also the ones installing everything in. So they're kind of trying to get into the business of wind farms. And Ørsted has been at this for a long time with massive amounts of subsidies and they're failing. So from the point of view of this report, I think Treasury needs to have another look at this and just look at the assumptions. I mean, you know, really, you're going to be applying the Ukraine crisis worst possible generation cost to gas to try and make the wind look better.
Okay. All right. Well, what's that FOI number? Oh, sorry. I mean, by the way, I would hazard a guess that Ørsted say they're not failing, but that's your point of view. What's that FOI number again?
Yeah, 549-2041.
Okay, 549-2041. Thanks for calling today, Julian.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
24 minutes past 12. Howard's with us now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. I've just listened to David when he first came on there about the loss of the facilities through the post office.
Yeah.
And it's sad. A lot of people are going to lose their livelihood, in a sense, but you only look at one instance, as I say, with the DVLA, but the vehicle licensing. That's only one aspect of it. You used to walk in with a piece of paper. All your information was on that. All the relevant information was in a barcode, and the post office used to, within a matter of minutes, you'd be walking out with a new road tax disc. But who issues that bit of paper? The government and the vehicle taxing authority, they issue that paper. They have all the relevant information. So why can't they do that at the tax, the test centre? As I say, I fell foul of it when I went up and, oh, we can't use that. have you got your insurance? And went all the way down that road, and in the system somewhere, the girls up there had not been, or assuming they had not been properly trained by the DOI, and it's the DOI's fault again. But the information was there, and I used to go down, I have done for years, to the post office here in Annika, and the people behind there, bing, bing, dang, gone, and you'd be out in a matter of minutes. And the government seemed to be hell-bent on destroying all these facilities. You used to be able to go in and pay various bills. You're limited to what you can pay in
there. What can and can't you do at Annika Post Office now? It's inside the spa, isn't it?
And the post office, it looks like a warehouse now. God love them, they must be off their feet with parcels, many parcels going. That post office is in the corner, and I went down there about a week ago, and it was jam-packed with parcels, with three bags of them also out in the customer area. So why there's such an amazing rush of parcels going down to that post office, probably because there's nowhere else to go to. But the only other thing you can get, essentially, are stamps. And they're time-restricted because they're only open a certain time down there to get stamps. And then you go in, you have to go to the counter to get them, if they've got them. So it's a very poor system.
Well, it's hardly what you call an increase in service, is it, Howard?
It's a very big decrease in service. You know, it's nothing to do with the people that's working there. They're just doing what they're told.
No, I mean, and that's what we need to make very clear, is that we're not talking about people on the shop floor, the people that do the work from day to day.
No.
This has been made at a higher grade.
Very much higher grade. And it's a creeping disease that's coming through the post office. And I can see somewhere in the system next time, they're going to say, well, we're going to do away with the Isle of Man post office. We'll just link into the Royal Mail. And you'll be paying £1.80-something for a stamp. At the moment, you're paying £1.08 for a letter to go across, and just under £1 here, I think it is. But they're looking to, well, just virtually get rid of it. And that piece of paper, as I say, they send you that piece of paper from government office, and all your details, your insurance, everything that's on there, and they just automatically link into that, print the your disc, and out you go. Very efficient and a very pleasant way to do business. Now, if you go up there, are you doing it online? I'm doing it online, that's all you get. And I don't do online, particularly when I'm outside, because I don't have any internet. But a lot of people, my wife, if she had to do something like that, she is not computer literate. She can use them. But anything like that, it's difficult for people of our age. And we're still driving, and we're still doing business. What? There's people within government are determined to get rid of everything that is not online.
Yeah.
Also, not just looking for the talker now, again, the DOI. I don't know what those letters stand for. talking about a new bus terminus.
Yeah.
And Victoria Street. Now, they went through this several years ago and they found it was unworkable. They were talking about being up by Starbucks and all that. But they're talking about the bottleneck and how many car parking spaces are going to be lost down there if they do some work down in the bottleneck, plus the fact that you won't be able to have it was bushes and all sorts of PT week. But who's going to walk down to the promenade like that in the middle of winter?
Yeah, especially when you've got an easterly coming in and you're at high tide as well.
Exactly, and you'll have children with you. You'll be elderly. My wife suffers sciatica, and she's not tearing about all over the place.
Yeah.
If she went to get a bus down there, it'd be extremely difficult.
And
her.
Also, that's going to be by when the horse trams are renewed and get back to the sea terminal. The horse trams will be right next to it.
Well, I'll wait on that one. I'll hold my breath on that one. But, you know, the people that's in these powers to be they've just got a piece of paper in front of them. They draw a plan on it, and they have no idea what the implications are. And, you know, it's a classic example, the bottleneck car park. It's aptly named. It's a car park, and they're going to lose revenue because it's a chargeable one. And, you know, they're going to have buses coming in and out and people trying to walk around there, cars coming in and out. It's going to be a dangerous situation.
Well, the rumour is, the skeet, Howard, is that there's going to be a big car park built around Circus Beach. There's going to be a multi-storey car park around there. That's the rumour at the moment. So if they do get rid of, as they got rid of all the car parking spaces on the prom, shoving people towards where they're paying for car park. And that was part of one little thing about the Isle of Man that's just fallen off, that's crumbled off, was free car parking for Douglas. It was very easy to park around Douglas and go and do some shopping, and now you're either squeezed into, you know, three dozen places, or you have to pay.
Exactly. So that was my rant.
Okay.
I'll have to go because I've got to go and pick the young grandson up.
All right. Appreciate
but,
it. All right.
I'll see if I can find a car park.
Thanks for calling today, Howard. Good to be with you.
Big Red Storage in Tramode and Ronalds Way offers secure self-storage units in various sizes with ground floor options and 24/7 access. Check offers and prices using our online space calculator at bigred.im or call 640040.
Geoffrey, how do you like this composite door from Spectrum Windows?
Oh, good choice, missus. Stylish and hard-wearing. It'll transform the house.
Trouble is choosing the colour. There's so much choice.
How about red? It goes with your eyes.
Anyone would see red living with you, Geoffrey.
For a huge range of solid composite doors in a great range of colours, including red, visit Spectrum Windows, the showroom, Derby Road, Ramsey, or call 817777.
SMS Trading. New and second-hand furniture from flat pack to fully built. See our range at 3 St Paul Square, Ramsey. All island delivery and man-in-a-van service available. Call SMS Trading on 315151 or find SMS Trading on Facebook.
Visit Ramsey Art Gallery for a fabulous range of top brand watches and stunning gold and silver jewellery, gifts for all occasions, and of course our gallery of prints and original artworks. Find all this and more at Ramsey Art Gallery Jewellers and Engravers opposite the RNLI shop.
Need help with your business finances? Nicola Bowker & Co. has helped hundreds of businesses achieve a firm financial footing. Here to guide you to financial success. Contact Nicola Bowker, accountants and tax advisors to businesses on the Isle of Man.
The Isle of Man Symphony Orchestra's exciting summer concert will feature the William Tell Overture, Elgar's Enigma Variations, music by Bizet, and Grieg's ever-popular piano concerto with soloist Dominika Mack. An evening of brilliant music in the Villa Marina Royal Hall on Sunday, the 5th of July at 7:30. Tickets on sale now.
Wimbledon 2026 is now underway, and here on Manx Radio, we're celebrating by serving up strawberries and cream to workplaces around the Isle of Man. We'll be out making deliveries for the next fortnight, and if you'd like us to visit your workplace or a place of work you think deserves a sweet treat, all you need to do is fill in the nomination form at manxradio.com. Entries close this Friday morning at 10 o'clock. Serve up some Wimbledon fun and bring a touch of centre court to your workplace with Orchard Recruitment, Tesco and Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Is it true, says 258, that Tawson stores in Port St Mary are stopping postal services from tomorrow? Is that true? I'm not allowed to talk freely about Isle of Man Post, but apparently it is true that Amazon parcels are being prioritised over everything else, i.e. get Amazon out first and then the rest comes after Amazon. Is this true? Well, we'll try and put that question to the post office. And again, if it's true, why not just say it? Why not just say the post office is an agent for Amazon and they're paying us so much that comes first, or it, you know, secures our financial model, our business model. That's great. But if they tell us otherwise, is that true or is it not? And it's kind of ironic. We're coming up to the 53rd anniversary. On the 5th of July 1973, the Alamo Post Office Authority was formed and took over the postal assets and functions of the British Post Office. It's 53 odd years. The Channel Islands had their own post office before we did, but there were negotiations in 1972, and it was then reconstituted as a statutory board and renamed the Alamo Post Office under the Post Office Act 1993. But it's 53 years this coming Sunday that we took over our own post office. And it will be nice to know how much is going to be left in the future. I did my road licence at the Vehicle Test Centre on the 17th of June. I'm still waiting for the new discs 13 days later. How can it take that long to post from Douglas to Ballasalla? My wife orders something from Amazon. She gets it a day later. Has anything the government improved worked better? I can't think of anything that's improved in the last 5 years. Well, obviously their wages have, says JB. And Eddie's with us now. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Andy. All right, mate.
Yeah, good. What's on your mind?
A couple of items, if I may. But first of all, Howard, well done, mate. That's common sense prevailing again. But the one thing that's lacking in government is that. first thing I want to say is your first caller, was it David on first?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was pointing out that we're being pushed all the time into use a computer, which doesn't suit everybody, like you said. And also being pushed in to make card payments for everything, aren't we? You know, it's just the way that it's all going. They're forcing us to have it. We're not getting a much of a choice. But just to make that point out how stupid it is, in a sense, I went into Castletown at weekend, and nearly every place I went into, the co-op, pubs, so on, a little sticker on the till, cash only. So when I went round the corner to the cash machine at the Civic Centre, out of order again. So I ended up having to borrow some money off one of my friends.
Why was it cash only in the stores?
They said something about the computers were down or something like that. I don't know. It wouldn't take card payments. But it was everywhere you went. I believe it was down in Port St Mary and Port Erin as well. So I've no idea, but that's, you know, you can sort of check it out if you want, but it's...
But the thing is, if when that happens, we're stymied, we're backed into a corner, we can't do anything.
Well, that's why, like so many people have said, why is it we can't have a bit of common sense and have both, cater for both? Instead of that, we're being forced into doing one way, and it's not working. Obvious. So stop it. Let's hope the next government do something about it. My second point is I've asked a few of the people who are standing for election what their thoughts are about the wind turbines. And they tell me that they're not allowed to put it into the manifesto. So I then say to them, you know, well, are you for it or against? And they'll give me a yes or a no, won't they? But I'm thinking to myself, when these people who are going to stand, when they put their manifestos out, won't the same rules where the government are banning them to comment about wind turbines, won't that apply to everything? Otherwise, they won't be able to vote on them things neither.
I think it may be something to do with the planning process that's going on with Ørsted and the fact that, and they're not banned from doing it, it will then preclude them from any decision making in the future because they've given an opinion, which means that when it gets to the further process, they're compromised because they've given an opinion.
Well, when you get these manifestos, there's similar things in the manifestos which will eventually come up where they've got to vote on them. So they might actually be banned from that as well. You know, it just doesn't seem democratic that you can stop somebody from saying whether they're for a thing or against. I mean, if all of these people won't actually put it in writing or say to me verbally... you know, in a manifesto, I mean, sorry, something that I can get back to them in the future. I mean, you have Hansard where they all talk about things and it's all recorded. But a manifesto is our way of saying, you said this and I'll hold you to it. And at the moment, they're just stopping them from saying whether they're for it or against. That doesn't seem democratic in any way whatsoever, does it?
And what do the candidates say when you talk to them? How many have you chatted to?
Well, of all the ones I've chatted to, and I've just heard of another one, I've got to go and see him. But everyone I've spoke to, simply because it's down south, they're all against it. But I imagine that, I think on the radio the other day, you had so many candidates in the Garth area. Is it five now?
I think so, yeah.
And not, they're all going to be against it, I would imagine, because it's right in front of them. So in the West, you'll have so many candidates who, not, you know, could be the other way. But you should be able to say, if I've gone to all of mine and they've all said they're against, they're for it, I mean, and the village idiot would have stood up and said he's against it, I'd have voted for the blinking village idiot.
Okay.
So for us people out here, we need to know what these people think about it. So I've actually got on tape from some of the ones I've asked, you know, with my own little tape recorder in my pocket, them saying yes, they're against it. You know, so I've got that, but that's going to be no good, is it? I can hold them to that, but not the government to that.
Okay.
Because once they get in government, anybody, they can do what they want then, because it's not in their manifesto.
Okay. All right.
So they're actually hushing them, aren't they?
All right. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Eddie. Thanks for being with us today. I want to go to Julie now. Hello, Julie.
Hello. Hang on. I'll just take you off loudspeaker.
Thank you. Turn the radio off.
Turn the radio off. Yeah, sat in the car.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I just wanted to sort of mention a couple of points about the hospitals and the hospital systems in general. My daughter was unfortunately involved in a bit of an incident where she ended up with a glass being broken in her face. So we didn't think that it was an emergency, so we didn't go to A&E, but we did go to Minor Injuries in Ramsey, who looked at it and said, you know, well, we think it's a little bit worse than you're looking at. I mean, basically, my kids used to have a limb hanging off, you know, before I'd take them anywhere. But my point that I wanted to talk about today was we did then go up to A&E this morning, and we're likely to be sat there for the next 8 hours, to which I've then converted that into a doctor's appointment who can then put the x-ray system through. But the whole system is broken. And the girls up there, the challenges, you know, that they've got. Whilst I was stood there waiting to see if that was a feasible option, because it wasn't an accident that's just happened, it wasn't an emergency, but it was something that needed to be actioned by a doctor, not by a nurse, which is why we were sent up there.
Right.
But whilst I was stood there, you know, sort of waiting to see where we were going to go, there was somebody came in with a sore finger. There was three people came in with a headache and were asked by the receptionist, have you taken any paracetamol? There was somebody else who came in and said that they'd been scratched by a cat, and I had to, you know, sort of look really hard to see where they'd actually been scratched. And so the point that I want to try and get over to people is probably, I would say, 60% of the people who were in there did not need to be in there. You know, there were people coming in and saying, you know, that they were poorly on Saturday. Well, it's Tuesday today, you know, so it's not an accident or an emergency, and that we need to start looking at treating ourselves, you know, and doing a little bit more for, you know, that we can do. I mean, like I say, the only reason that we went up there was because somebody, you know, said that the nurse in Ramsey said she thought there was still a bit of glass, you know, sort of in her eye.
Yeah.
But to me, that still wasn't actually an emergency. That was something that, you know, the ophthalmology department, you know, can deal with, not that it had to go through A&E.
So what's happened, Julie? What do you think's happened to her attitude to this?
Well, to be fair, I think a lot of it is, you know, if we go back to COVID, nobody was sick. You know, it was really quiet at the hospital during, you know, during COVID, because the only really sick people were there. And it's almost like people are trying to catch up. oh, well, I haven't been to, you know, to the hospital for 3 years. Think I need to go. You know, and we don't need to go for a lot of these things. I was bitten last week by a horsefly on my calf. And I don't normally get bitten because I've got poison in my blood. But this particular time I did. And my leg swelled up and my foot to the point where I couldn't actually get my shoe on. This was last week. And everyone's going, oh, you need to go to A&E, you need to go to A&E. No, I don't, no. So I went to the chemist and asked the chemist if there was something that, you know, she could recommend that I put on it. She gave me some hydrocortisone cream. Now, because it wasn't on a prescription, I had to pay £3.25 for it. And I don't know whether that's the link that people, you know, it's like, I've paid into my taxes, I'm not going to go and pay, because I know there was a big, big kickoff when they took paracetamol off people's prescriptions, you know, that you can go to Tesco and buy for 16p.
Yeah.
But it was like a right, you know, that I demand, you know, that you put that back onto my prescription, because I've always had that on there. I am on a lifelong medication. I work full-time, so I demand that I pay for that medication, which works out about 4 pence a day, because there will come a point where I'm on a pension. Well, there probably won't, because there won't be any. And, you know, I maybe need to have that extra, you know, sort of coming in. But it's not... We need to stop the expectation levels of, you know, we're going somewhere else and they're going to fix it.
Right. Oh, it's entitlement, you think?
It is, absolutely, you know, and it shouldn't be. You know, we need to go back to, you know, almost sort of pre-war, and, you know, look at what we can fix first and what we can do to be part of society rather than demanding what the government and society can do for us.
Right. How's your daughter anyway?
She's all right, yeah. We've got an ophthalmologist appointment tomorrow and an X-ray on Thursday.
Okay.
Because it isn't... But it's taken 5 hours with phone calls to try and get that so that we weren't another statistic sat in A&E for no reason, you know, that we didn't really need to be there.
Okay, Julie, good to hear from you. Yep. Thanks for being with us.
All right, take care. Enjoy your day.
12
Bye-bye.
Minutes now before one. I agree with David, but not everyone has got a laptop these days because they're expensive. I got a letter to ask to do my road tax online, but I don't have a computer, just an old phone, says Anna.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
There's monkeys and meerkats, penguins galore. You can meet with a panda, owls, lemurs and more.
The Currax Wildlife Park is open 7 days a week. So book your tickets and experiences online now at currackswildlifepark.im.
This old house needed new windows. This old house needed a new door. And with DPM Conservatories, we got all that and more. Now our bills are lower and the house is warmer too. We're cleaner and we're greener since we swapped our old for new. Stunning A-plus rated replacement windows and doors, expertly fitted by DPM Conservatories. Phone 612 333 or find them on Facebook and swap your old for new.
Sometimes you need to roll out an extra bed. Millichaps have a wide range of affordable and superior single and double folder beds to suit all budgets, including luxury pocket sprung options and a fabulous choice of sofa beds in a variety of styles and sizes. Perfect for home offices and spare rooms, and all in stock for speedy delivery when guests are expected. And don't forget the pillows and bedding, with plenty of choice available at Millichaps. For fold-up beds and more, visit Millichaps today.
You get more than you think, but all that you need when you
shop local with EVF.
Because your local EVF filling station isn't just a place for fuel, it's where you can get delicious food to go. Chilled drinks, wines and beers, barbecue and summer essentials, from ice creams to surfboards, plus a great range of local products. Ellen Van In Fuels. Fill up, fuel up and get all you need to go. Open till late.
Shop local with EVF.
This is your official invitation to take a stroll around Ramsey Garden Centre and take in the extensive ranges available for your home, no matter the size. Grow smarter, greener, season after season with Ramsey Garden Centre.
Join Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark, on tonight's Countryside programme at 6:30.
This week, we speak to the Manx National Farmers Union President, Murray Kringle, to see what challenges are around the agricultural industry and how he's finding his new role as the President.
I went along to Mary Vegan Santon to the Clay Target Shooting Club to witness some of the shooters there, some for the first time as well, all raising money for hospice. And also I went along to Silverdale Lake to speak to some of the people involved in the Manx Model Boat Club event.
That's all in Countryside tonight here on Manx Radio at 6:30. And don't forget you can download or subscribe to the podcast for free at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
9 minutes before one for the last day of June 2026. Here's Juan with us now. Hi, Juan.
Last day of June, Andy, eh? Well, summer's nearly over.
Can you imagine? It's all downhill to Christmas after tonight.
You're such an optimist. Just listen to a couple of things there on the all the sum up machines and everyone were down for a period on Sunday, and the co-op, I had to laugh actually, like Eddie was saying, they went into the co-op and they've been going on about using card and using everything digitally, and then you go in there and it's cash only, which is quite amusing.
Were they accepting IOUs?
Yeah, well, I tried that. I'd written a couple out, but they weren't having it, Andy. I put your name on one of them, and they certainly weren't having that.
Well, oh, yeah, I know. Wonder.
It's strange, and that goes back to what I said before. I've said it a couple of times now about keeping a Manx pound, keeping a like a Bristol pound. I talked about. We don't want to let some of these things go, and we can do that over here if we wanted to. It's just if there's a will, and I think a lot of this now, it's like the post office. We're talking about Hassan losing the post office at Onken, and. You know, this is programming the next generation. They don't really care about the older generation, and that's quite clear. You know, they're not going to be here for that long. Let's let them crack on. It's programming. It's a long game, isn't it? It's programming people into what they want next. And, you know, anyone who fought Every was talking about losing their jobs the other week, but who poached whose business? Because the Royal Mail and Alamann Post Office were there long before Every and Amazon started, and their business has been poached by others, so you know they're just trying to get their business back a little bit. It's an awkward one, isn't it? Because you know the powers that be are wanting to change everything, and you know everyone gets stuck in the middle with it all. Nobles Park, the jewel of Douglas, very underused jewel beside TT Week. I think you mean you've got bowling and a little bit of tennis, but I find that whole area is so underused. And they could do a lot more, like the Murray Park. Sometimes people don't want to go out of their way to do pop-up events in these places. And I think, you know, that these parks should be utilised a lot more for, like, fairs and pop-up events and you know, car boot sales, antique crafts. There's a lot that could be used for, without going into massive costs to the ratepayer. You know, to do these things up. They seem to go ahead with these schemes that's going to cost fortunes for the ratepayer, where all it needs is a little bit of outside-the-box thinking. It was the same with the play area on Douglas Promenade. They wanted to spend a fortune on that. Well, it's not really the right place. You've got Nobles Park there, right in the centre of town. Utilise that and do it.
What sort of things do you think could happen at Nobles Park?
Well, there's numerous things. Pop-up events is the best thing, I think, Andy. They could do all sorts of pop-up events there and you know, like mini concerts and, you know, let people put some tents up and let people actually do stuff without, you know, curtailing them and putting stuff in their way, you know, make good plings and massive insurances and all sorts of things that people have to jump through hoops to put events on. I think that's important. Probably Jed will talk about that on Thursday when he's on. But we have got the places to do it, and I think it's just a little bit of, you know, thinking outside the box from the council and the commissioners.
And also, I think, Juan, for things like that, and somebody's put events on in the past, sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years for something to take hold. Maybe the first year's not so good, the second year gets better, and by the third year, you're absolutely motoring. So these things do take time. People have to be able to experiment.
prime example with the Full Moon Festival, and Scott's put so much work into that over 3 years, and now he's going to have to relocate. And, you know, it's just finding its feet. Like you say, you know, big events like that take a lot of organising and fair play. You know, it's put a lot of effort into it. And now you've got to find a new place to put that on. But you've got the Villa Marina. You've got a place there. You know, if they just, you know, were sensible about, you know, all the rigmarole and everything else that goes with things these days, I think, you know, they could do things quite easily there. But knowing the council, they'll want to spend all our money on doing it.
But the thing is, there are lots of entrepreneurs on the island, and there are people who have ideas, whether they're for live events, as you say, concerts. There's a thriving music scene on the Isle of Man. So, you know, if the council did think outside the box, where and there's something I'll put to Devon Watson when he's on, what does the council want to see in Nobles Park? And it's the old thing: if somebody comes in and does something and it's successful, will the council want to take it over?
And the other problem is, like I said, it's the bureaucracy. And it's the same within government, it's the same within everything. People's hands are tied with bureaucracy of you've got to tick boxes these days to put things on. And a lot of people say, you know what, it's too much hassle. And you have got clever people over here, you've got smart people who are prepared to venture and do this stuff. But there's so much bureaucracy, it stops people doing it. You know, why should they put their head in the noose, you know, when there's so many bits and bats to go through? Just let people have a little bit more free rein, and I think, you know, these places could be full.
Okay.
And doing stuff.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Cheers, Andy. See you
good
now.
To talk to you. Thank you, Juan. This coming Thursday, Jed Power is on. Jed is a long-time advocate for the hospitality profession. He himself is a hospitality professional, and he'll be talking about what exactly we need to do to make our offering better, more attractive, and enticing to people. That's this coming Thursday. Devon Watson was due to be on this week, but he had some council business he couldn't put off, so Devon's on Wednesday the 8th. So that's a week tomorrow Devon will be on. Next Monday, the 6th, it's Timwell Day. I'll be live from the Lichgate in the morning. Maybe I'll see you there. So Jed Power tomorrow, Timwell Day on Monday, and Devon Watson next Wednesday. The authorities should do something about tree limbs growing out of the road at Governor's Bridge, says this correspondent. And the Lord Street site should be the bus station, not for building a hideous tower block. It's an embarrassment. The capital is no dedicated bus station with no facilities for passengers. The bottleneck car park is too exposed in bad weather, says 068. Thanks to Howie on the phones today. We'll catch you tomorrow.
WINT.